This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Looking to start a side hustle or become your own boss? Do it with Shopify. Whether you're selling succulents or stilettos, Shopify has the industry-leading tools to help you create, control, and grow your own business. So get serious about selling and get Shopify today. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.co.uk/special offer.
Welcome to Switched on Pop. I'm songwriter Charlie Harding. For a minute, seemingly every music influencer was going online and saying that AI music services would be the death of pop music. Just like ChatGPT can write sonnets about auto parts, new music AI tools like Suno and Udio can generate entire songs from prompts. You want Grandma's Dubstep Christmas?
Grandma's Dubstep Christmas beeps bumping through the snow. Granny's got the rhythm rocking to and fro.
Or how about the Pledge of Allegiance to your toothbrush?
I pledge to my toothbrush now. Sparkling teeth, it doesn't doubt. Minty fresh and oh so clean. Whitest smile you've ever seen.
I mean, come on. With songs like those, you really should be just giving up on your rock star dreams, right? Now, seriously, though, this stuff is consequential. These music AI startups are being sued by the Recording Industry Association of America for infringing on their copyright, and this lawsuit could possibly even upend the entire AI business. I recently spoke with Neelai Patel and David Pierce on Vergecast about what's going down and whether AI is killing music or if AI music might kill artificial intelligence. Here's that conversation, and if you enjoy it, subscribe to Vergecast in our show notes.
Hello and welcome to Vergecast, the flagship podcast of BBL Drizzy. That one track needs a podcast. We're going to talk about it for an hour this week and then an hour next week, minute by minute.
It's actually fun because then we get to spend the whole episode debating whether BBL Drizzy can be our theme song legally now that we've said that. And it's perfect.
We're going to do a lot of fair use on the show today.
Yes.
It's coming. Hi, I'm your friend Neelai. David Pierce is here.
Hello.
Charlie Harding from Switched on Pop is joining us. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Big week in the AI landscape. A weird week for me emotionally. I'll explain why in a second. The major labels have sued two AI companies that you may or may not have heard of, Udio and Suno. These are classic Silicon Valley names. We should all be proud. They're music companies. They're AI music companies. Udio is the company whose tool was used to make BBL Drizzy. We'll have Charlie explain that entire chain of events. And then Suno has a deal with Microsoft. It's in Copilot, and you can ask it to generate music in Copilot. How would you train an AI tool to make music, you might ask, as did the lawyers at the Recording Industry Association of America. And the answer is you just put a bunch of music in them, and you train the model on a bunch of music, including what appears to be a remarkable amount of the recording industry's music, not just music that's out in the world. The companies are sued. There's a lawsuit. The RIAA is mad. The RIAA is already mad. They say that they asked the companies what was used to train the models. The companies, Suno, deflected and said their training data was confidential business information. Fine. Udio made the same statements. And then Suno also said, our stuff is transformative and designed to generate completely new outputs, not memorize and regurgitate pre-existing content. We'll get to that in a second, because that is actually a very funny claim based on what you can do. The RIAA put tracks in lawsuit, which we will listen to. It straightforwardly can just make Johnny Be Good in a song called Prancing Queen, which is
my favorite.
Deeply hilarious. Yes. There's just a part of this where these companies knew that what they were doing was training on copyrighted work, and they kind of assumed that they would get away with it or at least be able to like pay the money and move on.
Can I ask a very possibly dumb framing question about this? Because we're going to get into the weeds of like a very specific music case, but a lot of what you just described, the sort of basic outlines of like how these companies trained their data and what they're being accused of doing and who's mad, feels identical to me to every other conversation we've had about these AI models, right? Like, it seems to me that if you change Johnny Be Good and Suno to the New York Times and ChatGPT, we're functionally talking about the same thing. So, like, I want to get deep into this in weird ways, but like, is there something different about the fact that we're doing this with music than the fact, the way we've been doing this with like the web for the last year or so?
Yes. And okay. It's that the music industry is organized and aggressive when it comes to protecting its rights.
So the difference That's is lawyers.
The difference is lawyers. And also the history of music and the internet is lawyers. Like, the reason I'm so conflicted about this is that I went and became a copyright lawyer because Napster came out when I was in college and I was radicalized because I thought everyone was stupid, which is what should happen when software comes out when you're in college.
Yeah.
I'm assuming there are some kids out there today who are radicalized by the presence of new software. But it was Napster. I went off and became a copyright attorney. I sucked at it. I don't ever want anyone to think I was good at this. As a practicing attorney, I was garbage. But the thing I did was I worked at a law firm that defended other college kids who got sued for using Kazaa against the RIAA. And the RIAA was suing college kids and actually suing the universities to get the IP address of the college kids on their networks who were using the tools and then identifying the college students and then suing the college students.
It was my roommate's computer. It wasn't me.
Yep.
I swear.
This is like a lot, right? That's a lot. That's just a lot to people. Like, the universities are caving and not protecting their students. All this stuff is happening. And they were running this program at break even. They just wanted $5,000 settlement so everyone would be scared and stop doing it. And they won. That worked. Sort of. Now we're back to it, right? But like, the movie industry is not quite as good at stopping the piracy as the music industry was. And they ran that program to kind of like shut it down and chill Napster and Grokster and Kazaa and all the other ones. They ran Grokster all the way up to the Supreme Court. That decision is 20 years old now, the RIAA versus Grokster. Great. Then they did the iTunes store. And they got deals with Steve Jobs and then other music stores. And then they did Spotify and Apple Music and streaming. And all along the way, they have been extraordinarily litigious and extraordinarily protective of their copyrights because people have an emotional connection to music that they can trade on. This is true in a way that even Hollywood doesn't. Like, when Disney's like, we must protect the copyright to the Avengers, people are like, go fuck yourself. Like, right, in a way that the music industry, when it's like, you're stealing music, you are making it so artists don't get paid, there's an emotional resonance that argument tends to have. Charlie, I'm curious how you see that changing over time, but they've been good at it and they've run the playbook over and over and over again. Music is also a closed ecosystem of like four big companies. And so you see things like interpolation, where an artist uses a bit of a song from another artist and fans get mad and then writing credits get distributed and money flows inside of a closed ecosystem. None of that is true about the web. None of that is true about the media. So if you're like are a writer at a media company, nothing. Like, no one cares. Like, there's not some big apparatus designed to make it as seem like your work is emotionally resonant and should be protected in the way that the music industry does. So I think that's a huge difference here. The other difference, and this is where I really, Charlie, I'm very curious for your take here, is that the outputs of these systems are just the songs, right? And the lawsuits are about training, right? All copyright is dumb. Like, it's a dumb legal system because it just regulates copies. And so they're like, you made a copy to do this thing and you didn't have the permission to do the thing with the copy that you made. So copyright infringement. Weird. All computers do is make copies. We've talked about this so many times on the show. So they're not talking about the outputs, but I think the outputs are so convincing. Like, in order to get to the thing can just make Johnny be good, it is obvious that you made a copy of Johnny be good. Charlie, what do you think, man?
I feel like the music industry is the one place that copyright becomes part of public conversation in a very frequent way. People talk about when Pharrell is borrowing from Marvin Gaye. People talk about when Stairway to Heaven might have been copied by another song. People constantly are debating in social media, hey, you kind of sound like you borrowed this other person's thing. They should get a credit on it. There's no thing in journalism where someone's like, hey, you know, Neil, I kind of used someone else's text. Maybe we should give David some extra credit on that piece that Neil, I plagiarized. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm obviously not accusing you of
actual, I do that all the
this
time.
This is hypothetical.
Yeah, I don't think specifically Neil, I does that all the time.
I have like, God mode Google Docs access, and I just lift everybody's copy left and right.
There's just no other creative industry that where there's this like a level of actual infringement that happens, that then there is this internal litigious system where these major players are constantly trading credits back and forth, and the public is in on it, often debating whether or not their the artist that they stan is making original work. This is part of popular discourse and it happens in music. So it's really different when the music industry is going after AI than if the New York Times is, because I've just never been in a circumstance where I'm talking about that article was completely lifted from this other article, but we constantly talk about, is so-and-so writing their own songs?
Right. I'll give you a dumb example from movies. The movie The Dark Knight is basically an interpolation of the movie Heat, except with Batman.
Yeah.
Right. Like many of the shots are the same. Christopher Nolan is out there being like, Heat is the greatest cops and robbers movie ever made. Like, I just wanted to make Heat, but with Batman. And then you like watch both movies. You're like, oh shit. Like, dude just made Heat with Batman. Yep. And that's great. And I think everyone's like, this is the best. Like, this is so cool. And then you get to, I don't know, Miley Cyrus is writing Flowers, which the lyrics just reference
Bruno Mars.
Bruno Mars. And people are like, should she have to pay Bruno Mars? It's like, why? Like, why? Like, the melodies aren't – like, she's just saying some of the same words.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? But the expectation is that there should be some economic exchange of value.
Well, and I would think then that the existence of that exchange of value is also how you get to something like this, right? Where it's not just everybody sort of yelling and then nothing ever happens. It's that we actually have a system by which this gets solved, right? Where we have people get songwriting credits and then they get paid for it. And there's like the music industry has built ways for all of this to work. And like you said, is very good at picking fights with those who do not play inside of that system. And so like now I'm just thinking, okay, the difference between the music industry and the others who are fighting against OpenAI and others, like just groups of authors or whatever, is not only does the music industry have a system by which it understands how everybody is supposed to get paid that has existed for a long time and everybody kind of sort of understands, but also is able to marshal that whole system against anyone who wants to exist outside of that. And part of what we've been saying forever is like all the money is on the side of the AI companies. Like who is going to be able to run a lawsuit against Google all the way to the end? And there probably aren't that many creative industries other than the music industry that might be able to do it.
They've done it before.
Yeah.
And they have won major concessions.
Right.
We wouldn't have Content ID if not for music labels going after YouTube.
Right.
And the music labels have gone after YouTube, right? Universal, yes. This is where Drake gets involved. There's fake Drake that we've talked about endlessly on the show. Shout out to Laserbong, a song that has been just aggressively censored from every major platform. Boy, does TikTok not want electronic music about bongs on its platform.
Sue about that, record labels.
You want to talk about government censorship.
Yeah.
All right? The Chinese government is like, no bongs for American teens. Just saying it. The piece of that puzzle that's super interesting to me is Universal was mad about fake Drake. They went to Spotify, Apple. They said, don't have this song. And Spotify and Apple control the catalogs and their music service they can pull down. YouTube is open access, right? So anyone can upload anything. And then there is Content ID and they have these other copyright management systems on YouTube. But it's not the same catalog control where you can just delete the song the way that Spotify and Apple Music could just delete the song. So they had to come up with some other system. And YouTube did give the concessions, right? They put out a list of like AI principles that they would work on about safety, about this other stuff. And a lot of it was, we're going to work directly with Universal and the rest of the music industry to figure out what tools are valuable and what tools aren't, and even to allow some creators to like do some of this AI music generation because we think it's cool. And then we'll figure out how to pay them. This is implicit. If you're like co-announcing that tool with Universal Music, Universal Music is going to get paid.
Yes.
Like the heat death of the universe could occur. And Lucian Grange, the CEO of Universal Music, would get paid. Like, he's good at it.
Yes.
These two companies did not do that. There's a quote from one of the VCs in Suno, a Rolling Stone profile from March. And he just says to Rolling Stone, if we had deals with the labels when the company got started, I probably wouldn't have invested in it. I think they needed to make this product without the constraints.
Wild thing to say out loud.
Incredible thing to say out loud.
They said the quiet thing out loud. Because behind all of this, they haven't ever really quite publicly admitted that they are using copyrighted works. They've talked around that in every way they possibly can without denying it. And this is sort of like the big, this is the smoking gun.
Right. And then the other smoking gun, and this is the part we should just listen to some of this music, is the output of the models themselves, which is, let's listen to it and we can talk about it. David, take us through it.
Okay, I have brought some sound. Thank you to Andrew and Liam for getting all of this together. We have three examples, and I will just roll through all three. Stop me when you have feelings about this. The first thing we'll do is, this is just titled Real Chuck Berry in Riverside. So let's just listen to this first.
By the way, and this is all fair use. No copyright infringement intended. All right, YouTube. All right, go ahead. But he could play a guitar just like a ring in a bell. Go, go.
Sure.
Go, Johnny, go, go. Go, Johnny, go, go. Go. All right, that's enough. Stop it.
Great
before
song.
The robot sensors arrive.
Great song.
I can
we love it.
Right? All right, that is it.
If you don't know that song, one, go watch Back to the Future. Incredible movie that you should just watch. And two, like, stop. Go get cultured. I don't know what you're doing.
Johnny Be Good, Chuck Berry.
Yeah.
It's founder of rock and roll, one of them.
Yeah. And now we have a song from Udio, which is not called Johnny Be Good, but just listen. But he can play a guitar just like a ringing a bell. Go, go! Go, Johnny, go! Go! Go, Johnny, go! Go! Go, Johnny, go! Go! Go, Johnny, go! So, I mean, it's...
So that one is non-copyright infringement, just on its face.
Yes, you can't.
You can't copyright the AI work.
Yeah. Okay. So that's one. Next, we have a
Wait,
James
can we just? I just want to ask Charlie a hard question. Charlie's a professor of music at NYU, I believe, right?
Yes.
All right, professor. Let's say you didn't have Johnny Be Good in the training data, but then you had the entire architecture of rock and roll that is built on Johnny
Be
Good.
Yeah.
Could you back your way into Johnny Be Good?
Monkeys and typewriters and Shakespeare, right? Like that's the, is that the theory
but like
here?
You don't need, do you need the seed crystal when you have the whole diamond mine of rock and roll?
It's a really good question because, you know, if you look at this era of music where R&B, rock and roll are sort of like rockabilly are all kind of one entity. The music is drawing on 12-bar blues, a very standard song structure. They're often in the same keys that play well on guitar. They're using a lot of the same kind of guitar licks. They're mostly using pentatonic scales. They're using a lot of the same language. And you might think, yeah, you could just sort of back into that. But the precise rhythms, the exact words, let's be clear, the copy is worse. It does not sound nearly as good as the real Johnny Be Good. You could never get to that same place without having heard that Johnny Be Good. I feel confident. And if these two songs, one being a real song and the other being nobody owns the copyright and it's made by an AI, if there were a copyright case made against the copy, it would definitively lose. I have the many of these cases, many of these music copyright cases are not clear. They're often fought over eight notes, sometimes six notes, sometimes a general feel in the case of Blurred Lines and I Got to Give It Up. This is a direct copy of the rhythm and the words and most of the melody. So, no, you had to have heard this song in order to make Johnny Be Good twice.
By the way, if you want more on eight notes and how complicated it is, Charlie and I did an entire episode of Decoder pulling that apart. We'll link that in the show notes somewhere. But let's move on. Let's listen to the next one.
Even before this past weekend, this election was bonkers. First of all, it's a straight-up rematch. The rematch from hell. The rematch no one wanted. Former president versus current president. Newly convicted felon versus father of newly convicted felon. The two oldest major party candidates to ever run for the top job. Record-breaking old men. One guy facing more legal challenges than every other president in history combined. The other guy facing relentless calls to step down from just about every corner of his own party, but saying he's got to stick around because American democracy's on the line. We had never seen anything like it before this past weekend, before a kid in Pennsylvania tried to kill Donald Trump. America just dodged a bullet, and maybe we can learn something from it. That's on Today Explained.
Hi, this is Kara Swisher, host of On with Kara Swisher from New York Magazine and Vox Media. And wow, what a month we've had. There's so much going on right now. Two ongoing wars overseas, deepening political turmoil here in the U.S., and a presidential election that might now be in flux. Well, we've had a great lineup of guests on the show to talk about it all, from the U.S. ambassador to NATO, Julianne Smith, to Governor Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan, to my latest episode, an interview with Rachel Maddow of MSNBC. Knock that off my bucket list. I'm so excited to talk to her. Have a listen.
If the Democrats replace Joe Biden with Kamala Harris or with any other candidate, will they have a better chance at beating Trump? I don't know, and neither do you. We can't tell from this vantage point. But if Joe Biden were running against Donald Trump today, he would lose and likely lose badly if the polls are accurate.
The full conversation is out now, and you'll want to hear it. Find it wherever you get your podcasts, and be sure to follow On with Kara Swisher for more kick-ass conversations like this one.
All right, next up, we have James Brown. First, real James Brown.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't.
I mean, the classic. An all-timer.
Right. Another one where if you're listening to the Verchess and if never heard this song, like, I don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Go listen to Switch Song Pop.
It will, yeah, exactly.
You need it very badly.
Go
life.
To school and then come on home.
And now we have AI James Brown.
Wow! I feel good. I Ooh. Knew that I would not.
That's spicy.
I feel good. I knew that I would not. So good.
Okay, so this Ooh. One I actually think is very fun because it is a little... It's like a little tiny bit further away from it. In the way that the first one just is Johnny B. Goode, but worse. This one is like one... tiny
yeah,
tick
this is
further
a,
away from being just the thing.
This is a lounge band with pretension where everyone's like, just play it the way that, can you stop it? All right, like, we get it. You thought you had something. I have one question about this, and it I actually felt the same way about Johnny B. Goode. The way these models work, right, is you ingest a bunch of data into them. They set a bunch of model weights, and then they like statistically make the next bit. Right, they're just sort of like assembling the thing around the prompt, which means they're kind of just assembling ones and zeros to make a sound wave here, which is pretty wild if you think about it. Like, that makes sense with words, right? What is statistically the next word in the sentence around this prompt? When you get to like, what are the ones and zeros of a sound file, and you get to statistically hear the next ones and zeros, that's pretty weird. It's actually a pretty weird way to make an audio recording. And the thing that strikes me about these. This one in particular, but the other one a little bit, the instruments don't sound real at all to me. Those horns sound so fake. Not like synthesizer fake.
No.
But almost exactly like what you would expect if you asked a computer to statistically produce a horn section.
Mm.
Like it's almost – play it again. You're like, just listen to it. It's so weird.
Wow, I feel good. I knew that I would not.
Do you hear how like weird and thin it is?
I knew that I would not. So good. So good.
It doesn't sound like an ensemble of horns. It sounds right. like this weird synthesized thing where the beginning of the sound and the end of the sound is exactly lined up. The sound is there's this artifacting quality to it. This is like the Pope's jacket version of sound.
Yes.
Where it's like you got it close, but all the lines are wrong. Why does he have seven fingers?
Right. It's a statistical approximation of a hand, right? Yeah. But as expressed as a horn section. Which is really weird, like just on its face, and you can, you know, people are like, it'll get better and blah, blah, blah. But like, you can, to me, you can hear a meaningful difference once you know what you're listening for. And it's like, oh, this is a fake instrument. It's not a fake instrument the way a synthesizer is a fake instrument.
Right.
It's just fake. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Over the top of all of it right now, and I don't know if this is a solvable problem, I imagine it probably is that everything sounds kind of grainy. There's like this top level hiss kind of over the entire recording of any AI output. It sounds maybe equivalent to, Neli, those files that you were not downloading in college. Like the really low bitrate MP3s when MP3s were actually noticeably worse.
Yeah.
That's what these sound like. All of them have this artificial sheen on top that sound very lo-fi.
Yeah.
In addition to artificial instruments.
Just a side note, I can't listen to the song In Between Days by The Cure without mentally inserting the weird compression artifacts at the high end. Because I listened to a shit MP3 of that song so many times that the cymbals are just forever distorted in my brain.
There's literally a plugin and guitar pedal called Lossy that is made to recreate the sound of early 2000s MP3s.
That's very good.
So if you need it, I can run it for
Lossy. It's just the elder millennial button, basically. All right,
so, exactly. So that's the sound.
Yeah.
Talking about the actual music here. Is this, right, with Johnny B. Goode, you're like, that's straight copyright infringement. This is weird, right? It's like slant rhyme. What do you think?
I think that it's the exact same rhythms. I'd have to look at the notes. I think they're quite close. They're the exact, if they're in, maybe they're in a different key, but they're like the same intervals moving in the same direction at the exact same time. That would almost certainly lose in court. If these were, again, we should be clear, the AI companies are not being sued for the output.
Yep.
But these outputs, if you were to try to make a case, I'm sure a judge would rule in favor of the James Brown estate because it is the same line. Well, it's more or less the same line. It's an interpolation of the line. There's slightly different words, but it's the same rhythms, same melody that almost always is going to that's always going to win.
And here the output is proof of the input.
Right.
They're not suing for the output, but right. The output seems unusually important here in that respect. That it's like if UDO is doing the thing that it claimed to be doing, which is transforming stuff into other stuff. We have a very different kind of fair use case, but reading through the RAA's lawsuit, like the thing they did over and over and over was just go reproduce songs that exist in the world. And that's how we're fighting about training. I went through and pulled a bunch of the prompts that they used to get songs.
We did
and
the same thing.
They're so funny. Like to get the Green Day song, I think it was American Idiot. The prompt is pop punk, American alternative rock, California, 2004, Rob Cavallo. Perfect.
And that produced a pastiche of American Idiot?
Yes.
Amazing.
To get My Girl by the Temptations, it was My Tempting 1964 Girl, Smokey Sing, Hitsville, Soul Pop. Got My Girl by the Temptations. This one you'll enjoy, Neli. To get All I Want for Christmas Is You by Mariah Carey. The prompt is Mariah Carey, but with a space between each letter so that it's not, because presumably these things are trained to throw out artist names. Yeah. So it's M space A space all the way through the name. Contemporary R&B holiday, Grammy award winning American singer songwriter, remarkable vocal range. That produced All I Want for Christmas Is You.
What they're proving is that it's in the set. By the way, the argument in response that I'm sure we're going to hear, because this is the argument OpenAI made about the Times lawsuit, was one, no human prompts like this. And B, these prompts are so weird, they represent a hack of our system, which is remarkable. But I'm confident based on how OpenAI replied to the Times that that is what these companies will reply
there
to.
There is one very good one that the prompt was create a song by an artist that rhymes with Truce String Bean that produced a Bruce Springsteen song.
That's very good.
It's fantastic.
So that question I asked Charlie about if you have the entire history of rock and roll, do you need the first song, right? Or do you need Chuck Berry? Okay, maybe you don't, maybe you do, right? Like, I think this third example is the funniest example because I can't figure how you would get to this without specifically one thing. Go ahead, David.
I'm glad you agree because I left this for last for precisely this reason. So here is, I won't even spoil it. Here's the real one. Jason Derulo. Yeah, okay, right? Everybody's heard it a million times. That's our boy. That's our boy, JD.
The longest lasting digital career that I never expected to happen.
I know. And here is the AI. I just want to say this was created by a prompt on Udio. This is in theory a completely synthetic new work of art. Oh, it's so good.
It does sound like a Jason Derulo song. Like my critique of does this sound like real music aside.
It's even got the little like vocal riff at the end. Like it's
like,
right.
Does Jason Derulo sound like synthetic music? That's your problem.
This one's interesting though, because you know, Neil, you've talked a lot about the issue that likeness is not copyrightable, right?
Yeah.
And so there's a question of like, if you know, we're going back to this hypothetical, there is no suit that's suing over this particular Jason Derulo riff. Someone could just, I could say Jason Derulo on a song probably, and it's not, you can't copyright that.
So you wait, hold on. Oh. This is weird. So
didn't
these
we
tags,
have this fight the last time with the Metro Boomin
tag?
Yes,
with the Metro Boomin song. So Metro Boomin's producer tag was the copyrightable expression in the fake Drake song.
if it's exactly the recording of the tag, though, right? Because it was the issue was that they actually kept in the sample of the producer tag and reproducing a recording, you can copyright that.
So we could start every episode of the Vergecast with Neelai singing Jason Derulo.
Jason Derulo.
And get away with it.
And we will.
I think you probably would have a lot of issues, a lot of nasty letters
written
to you.
I'm saying, in terms of ways to boost this podcast profile after 13 years, Jason Derulo suing us is high on my list.
That's wonderful. But this definitely proves that, like, you had to have had access. There is no monkeys in the back writing Shakespeare that ends up on Jason Derulo. It just doesn't happen. It's not possible.
Actually, I don't know. I think if you took the worst impulses of the music industry and fed them into an AI, you might produce Jason Derulo.
This one's also important, though, because everything else we've heard has been written by artists pre-Copyright Act of 1974 and probably also reflects some of maybe who the lawyers are writing these cases, because we're talking about the cases reference Frank Sinatra, right? And to bring in Bruce Springsteen, actually,
right, it's like Bruce Springsteen, Mariah Carey, Green Day, Johnny or Chuck Berry.
The early ones are all Chuck Berry, like The Temptations.
Right? Are you getting
Frank
it? Like
Sinatra.
The judges are old.
I'm saying everyone, yeah, and that's actually potentially very advantageous in knowing the judge and who you might go in front of. But then to show that also they're taking all the latest music as well. Like we're bringing in Jason Derulo. Yes.
Like, Judge, have you heard, Your Honor? Are you familiar with Jason Derulo?
I want to bring Jason Derulo into the courtroom. Jason Derulo.
By the way, another total side note, there's an incredible Katie Notopoulos piece about hardcore Jason Derulo stans and what their stan culture is like that I will dig up and put in the show notes.
Oh my gosh, that sounds fun.
It is truly one of the funniest things I've ever read on the internet. Just because A, it exists, and B, because Katie is good at finding things like that exist.
Have you all tried running these prompts, by the way?
Have you?
Yeah, you can go to Udio and to Suno and you can run the prompts that that these lawsuits are alleging, and you don't get the same songs, obviously, but like if you write make a jazz crooner song about New York, baritone voice, you will definitely get it's Frank Sinatra. There's just like there's no other song but Frank Sinatra. I don't think that really is hacking the systems. It's really easy. The other thing I get a lot, by the way, are random prompt. Hey, that sounds strangely like Crazy Town by Butterfly. My prompt was actually, I tried to make a rap about American founder Thomas
Butterfly
Jefferson.
Butterfly by Crazy Town.
Yeah. Thank you. Butterfly by Crazy
Town. If there was a band called Butterfly that had a song called Crazy Town, that would be perfect.
In another universe.
So I'm sure there is.
I did try to hack these systems a little bit. And I wrote, I want you to write a rap about American founder Thomas Jefferson about not throwing away his shot. Nasal male rapper, boom bap, and what I got was basically Butterfly by Crazy Town.
So. Just like total random.
Yeah. Put in hand, scribing out the revolution.
Oh, no. Tom Jeff never slept, crafted constitution. Slave owner by day, freedom writer by night. Hypocrisy thick, but the pen game tight. Oh, God. Visionary eyes, dreams like fireworks. Built a nation, but the boots got quirks. Creeks run red, history be relentless. But DJ's legacy, straight up contentious. Monticello ballad. I'm just sorry if you're listening to this and we suggest you.
That really is Butterfly by Crazy Town.
I think it's also a little bit of what was that song, Superman?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Who's Superman by?
I'll be your Kryptonite or whatever. That was horrible.
Kryptonite. Yeah. Kryptonite. Three Doors Down. Is that who it's by?
Three Doors Down. It is by Three Doors Down.
It's got a little bit of that. It's just, you can so easily hear references that are not even the thing that you prompt. And I have to say that if you go to the homepage of Udio, the two most popular tracks are exact sound alikes of Eminem and Snoop Dogg. So people are doing this. Like, people are trying to make sound alikes.
So the argument from all these companies is, look, training is fair use. And that's the argument for OpenAI. That's the argument for Google. It's the argument for Suno and Udio. Mm-hmm. The organization of these cases is different because the plaintiffs are different, right? The New York Times is situated differently than the major labels. People have different emotional relationships with different kinds of work. But this is the argument. Like, when Google eventually goes and sues OpenAI for training on YouTube, the weirdness of that argument is Google telling OpenAI that training on YouTube it's not fair. Like, that's what's going to happen here.
Hmm.
It's all the same argument. It's all kind of in a circle.
Wait, so Google can do it and it's fair use, but Suno and Udio cannot do it because it's not fair use.
This is the trap the industry has set for itself.
And our giant what's that line? Consolidated.
Yeah, right. It's like it's all like, the same VCs and all in all different right. directions.
Kind of like the music business.
Yeah, that's true. There's that line, though. It's like, you have to be perfect every time and I just have to get through once.
Yeah.
It's like, it can't, I don't remember exactly what it is. That's what's
like the hacker creed, right? Like, you have to stop me every time. All I have to do is, I just have to get through once. Yeah.
Yeah. And that feels like the copyright situation for AI right now. Mm-hmm. This is a house of cards, and maybe the Times will win. Maybe the record labels will win. Maybe Sarah Silverman will win. Like, there are so many of these. Maybe Google and OpenAI reach an agreement about training on YouTube, and then a bunch of YouTube creators sue, and maybe they win. Like, you can just game it out 100 different ways. At some point, someone is going to win a lawsuit that says training is not fair use.
Yeah. The fair use argument here, I feel like is notable. I feel like it's quite different than what the New York Times can claim, because part of fair use is, for example, the effect on the potential market, right? And with New York Times, they're going to have to argue, well, you know, you're using our articles and other people are taking that and creating text and putting it on other pseudo journalistic sites, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure the Times is suing for both the output and the training.
I see. Okay.
So I think right. these cases are all different. This is what I mean. Like, the strategy for one doesn't work for all of them in the same way.
Right. In the case of music, the marketplace argument, like, is it going to affect the marketplace? I think they have a very strong argument here. I think the RIA has a very strong argument. They're basically saying, Suno and Udio, you are charging users money to make songs that you are allowing them to upload to the exact same place where we also have all of our songs, to Spotify, Apple Music, etc. And so you are actually changing the marketplace for music, having used all of this output. But is that not part of the argument you're saying?
I think we have to find out how that shakes out.
Right.
Like, I don't know. They got to get assigned a judge, right? Like right now, what they've done is they put out a complaint in a press release. There hasn't been a reply to that complaint or an answer. They haven't been assigned a judge. Like, they haven't done any discovery. Like, we just don't know a bunch of stuff. And we certainly don't know where they're going to put their focus. But that part where copyright law is just about making copies, and in the history of computing, every single copy has been litigated down to, again, I bring it up. I think I bring it up every time. MAI versus Peak Systems. You go look it up. This is, are you a third-party software seller allowed to load software into a computer's memory without permission? Crazy court case. Yeah. Can you put a disk in a computer and load software from the disk to the hard drive without my permission? Got litigated. And they lost. Crazy. Hmm. They lost. And then we had to get all the way through caching. Are ephemeral copies on your ISP's network equipment, or those copies that should be litigated? This is copyright law. It's dumb. Like, it is a very dumb rationale, but it litigates the creation of copies. So here it's, did you have permission to make a copy to train your model of all these songs? And every time you didn't have permission, by the way, we want the statutory maximum of $150,000.
Which essentially ends up being a pretend amount of money.
It's right? got to be like, bigger than the US GDP.
Yeah, it's like crazy, right? Like, did you have permission to copy every song in the world? And if you didn't, every song in the world times $150,000 is what we're asking for.
I'm going
to
run this.
If you didn't have that permission, can we do an analysis that says that use is fair use? Right? So fair use is what's called an affirmative defense to copyright infringement, where you admit it. You're like, I did it. But under this other rationale, that's fine. And so that's like the winding path here is, well, first, they won't even cop to having made the copies, which is why the music industry is putting out, well, here's just Johnny B. Goode. Like, you can't output Johnny B. Goode unless you copy Johnny B. Goode on the front end, right? Okay, so first we got to get them to cop to making the copies at all, which they claim is proprietary business information. Sure. Then it's, was that copy allowed? They obviously didn't have permission. This is why they're in a lawsuit. And then it's, is it fair use? And then we run the analysis. And the analysis is like the purpose and character of the use, the amount of the use, the nature of the use, and then the last factor is the effect on the market.
Right.
On the output side, I think the market argument is really strong.
Right. So the question is, does this case – this is something I actually don't understand. Maybe you can explain with your copyright law degree. is there like some wall between the input and the output in this argument that says, well, there's no marketplace for...
You know that emoji
for...
that's like this with the hands? Yeah. It's the hands are up. Like, I'm just that emoji right now. Right. I don't know.
Because I was trying to say, oh, well, if there's a clear change in the marketplace for songs, which are all outputs, but it sounds like, you know, we don't know what the responses are going to be, but they could say, well, there isn't currently a marketplace for training data in this kind of way. And so it's not affecting that marketplace.
But if you, there will never be a market if you just set the rate at zero.
Right.
Right. So if you're like, I want really high quality music for my high quality music AI program, I'm going to go pay a bunch of artists, but then these guys come along and steal it. Like, you've actually preemptively destroyed the market. You've never allowed that market to set some rates. And I've heard from publishers who are taking the deals with OpenAI, disclosure, Vox Media has a content licensing deal with OpenAI. I've heard from other publishers, not our company, that one of the reasons they've taken these deals is to create that market, right? Mm. So that the Times can go to court and say, this has an effect on the market. Look at this market. Look at the money that's moving around. And so some of these publishers are playing kind of a strategic game to say, we should create a market to help that factor along. I think that's fascinating.
Hmm.
But I don't think that the AI company, I think they thought they could just buy forgiveness. And what's crazy to me is when it was Napster or YouTube or Google search even, buying forgiveness worked because people liked the companies. They liked the products. They liked the experiences they were having. And here people... I mean, if you're listening to this and you have a very different view of this, let me know. But our audience is pretty loud with us that they don't like these companies, and they perceive this as a moral problem. And I think that's just a very different position for them all to be in.
Which brings us to your moral quandary. It seems like you flipped sides from 20 years ago.
Yeah, the idea that I'm sitting here being like the RIAA has a point is crazy. Like, it's bananas. And Sarah Jong and I have been like all day, every day, like slacking. Like, who have we become? You know, this is like the horseshoe theory of copyright law politics. It's weird, man. And I think one of the pieces of the puzzle, and I'm curious how you see this in the music industry itself, Charlie. One of the pieces of the puzzle here is that the internet just blew the bottom out of the music industry. Like, there's no way to be like a middle class musician anymore. There's no guaranteed way to make money. You're like, you're playing the same algorithmic game as everyone else. You're beholden to some labels. You don't have any power as an individual against these platforms. So now this next group of people who's come and taken your work for free and is going to extract value from you. Well, sure. Like, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. It's kind of the vibe. But I'm wondering if you see that reflected in the actual music industry.
Absolutely. I mean, the public perception here is so different than what was happening back in the Napster era. Back in the Napster era, the labels were enemy number one. Selling out to labels was a big, you know, they were the worst players. Today, I actually think they've done a very effective job of using their proxy, Spotify, and let Spotify be the enemy. And everyone's like, Sony Music, who are they? Like, Warner, UMG? Like, they have label deal. But they are not, they're not the top of conversation of who's really screwing who. Now, they basically help set the rates of what gets paid out in streaming. And it's the distributors now that really are taking all the heat. And so they're actually in a better, I think, place of public perception in terms of within the music industry. I see songwriters, producers, fans totally freaked out about what's going on. When you go and scan through a lot of the YouTube comments of some of these AI songs, the sentiment is, we are screwed. Music is over. I give up. I am not learning an instrument. Like, it is not the future is bright. We're going to create new, beautiful music. Like, my creativity is going to blossom. I think that there is a real existential fear that exists within all of the, you know, the AI world. But you're getting into like our human emotions and the beautiful creative output. Hopefully, beautiful. I mean, listen, how you feel about pop
Jason
music?
Jason Derulo.
Don't bring Jason into this.
We got to get Derulo on the pod. Well, I don't know,
really do.
That's obviously like reading through the RIAA's lawsuit. Like, that is, they talk about the creativity and human emotion of it all. But is the end of this just they're trying to get checks in the same way that there
Absolutely.
Are a lot of folks out there just trying to get checks? Like, well, because part of me, like, I think obviously that's the answer, but also part of me wonders if the labels are feeling the same way that you do, which is that, oh, this is not just a thing we need to make money off of tomorrow. This is like an existential crisis for our business down the road. Or if they're like, whatever, this is just a new turn, we have to make sure we get paid.
This is an existential crisis because they are already losing market share to people who are not on major labels. Major label listening is down, right? As an overall share of all listening. It's still a lot of it. It's still the majority of listening. But so they recognize that flooding the streamers with more and more independent music has not necessarily been good for their business. And with more flooding, it's just going to bring everything down to everything is valueless entirely. If you own music and it gets played a lot on streaming, there's a lot of money in it. Like there's billions and billions and billions of dollars in streaming. How it's distributed is not always fair, and people get upset about this. But they very much need to figure out how to enter and participate in this marketplace. And I think kind of like a content ID system, they want to figure out how to properly license. You want to use Jason Derulo's voice? Jason Derulo says yes, and it costs this. And now we've got Jason Derulo copies, and that's okay.
By the way, of all of the artists who would let his voice get deepfaked to make like commercials,
Jason Derulo, yeah.
Jason Derulo. I'm not even saying I've talked a lot of Jason Derulo related ish on this episode. I'm aware of it. I just know that he is a commercial mastermind.
Yes.
Like, that man's going to make a bag no matter what happens.
Yes.
Friend of the pod, Blake Reed, he's a professor at Colorado Law, teaches copyright, telecom, all this stuff. He wrote me a note last week or the week before, and he said something really smart that I've been thinking about. And it's related to what you're saying, David. Copyright law is like an economic system. Right. We create scarcity and then we can like charge money for things because you're not allowed to just like freely copy them. So if you do something bad in the world of copyright law, the answer is you pay money and you fix it and you even out the economic problem that you've created. Right. Olivia Rodrigo might have sung four notes of a Taylor Swift song. The answer is Taylor Swift gets a writing credit and then some money flows to Taylor Swift. And that is the end of that story.
Right.
And it's just an economic problem that you've solved by redistributing money. Mm-hmm. AI is a moral problem. This is the thing Blake pointed out to me. It's like the money doesn't solve the perceived moral issue here. So the labels might get paid. They might find some business model that lets them license the music into perpetuity or whatever. But the thing you're seeing in the YouTube comments, the thing our audience is feeling, the thing I think a lot of artists are feeling, does not get solved by money, right? It's like another problem. And so like you see these deals come up and get signed and whatever, and everyone's like, it's still pretty icky. Right. And there's something there that I think is important. I haven't quite puzzled it out. I actually want to do something with that idea. If you have further thoughts, let me know what you think about it. But that gap is the gap. Right. We can move a bunch of money around, like the VCs and Hollywood and the Recording Industry Association of America. God bless them. They will move the money around. Lucian Grange will get paid. Is that going to solve the other problem? Right. Like, and I think that's really hard.
Well, there's two things that musicians need to not fear. One is that because the output of all of these models cannot be copyrighted, this music is kind of in this weird limbo space. Like maybe it's going to it will definitely find some streams, but it probably won't be synced on television and film because no TV producer is going to want to have a song where they like don't really understand the rights associated with that song. And if they have the right to it, and does it also secretly contain a vocal sample of James Brown that has been stolen? Like, so nobody wants to, any rights holder doesn't want to use this music that can't be used in a weird way. So I think composers and people who are putting stuff on TV and film, I think that there's still very much a business for them until these much bigger legal issues get sorted out. The other place is that music is about human connection. And I don't say this in some like wishy-washy way. It's like, there is no fandom for Olivia Rodrigo without an Olivia Rodrigo. Like you need the person. The time that the music industry tried to create like an avatar, racially strangely coded, what was that guy's name? It was terrible. They tried to do like their NFT avatar pop star and it was an utter failure, both because it was completely racist and because why would we develop a relationship to this thing? And so the fandom side, the pop stardom side of pop music, I don't think is ever going to go away.
What about Hatsune Miku? Right. She's like the cartoon character. I just learned that she's officially codenamed CV01.
Yeah, there are these avatar characters that are finding some fandoms online. Yes, that's going to happen. I still just like that doesn't that's not Olivia. That's not Taylor. That's not Gaga. I'm sorry. That's just different.
All right. We got to end it. They're not Jason Derulo.
They're not Jason Derulo.
Like the bar is like, can your cartoon character defeat Jason Derulo? I'll take it. That's a good place to end it. Charlie, thank you so much for joining the show. I suspect you're going to be back on the show quite a bit as these cases wind their way through the courts.
Anytime.
That's the Verge Cast. Rock and roll.
And that's it for the Vergecast this week. Hey, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 866-VERGE-11. The Vergecast is a production of The Verge and Vox Media Podcast Network. Our show is produced by Andrew Marino and Liam James. That's it. We'll see you next week.
If you've been enjoying this podcast, here's a look into what else is happening at New York Magazine. I'm Corey Sika, and I'm here with Reeves Wideman, who has written about the American obsession with NDAs. Where did they come from? Why are they everywhere? And are they good for anything besides covering up for abusers? After you poked around at NDAs for a while, do you see NDAs used mostly as tools of abuse and coercion? You see positive results? Like, where did you land on NDAs?
I think in most situations, it is used as a way to sort of claim power, but not even necessarily to like to do a bad thing. It's just kind of, it is this now this sort of boring standard tool in the toolbox of corporations or powerful people. But now it's being used on the people at the bottom. It's the warehouse workers at Amazon being made to sign them. Or like I was just trawling job listings while doing this story, and there were NDAs for forklift drivers and like people working in butcher shops. And I think on the one hand, it's just kind of like, well, I might as well. There's no downside for me to do this. But it is also just another way that you sort of keep your employees or people you get into a relationship with, that you sort of keep your thumb on them. So I do think it is, at the end of the day, the people who are giving them out by and large are trying to control someone.
Do you think that they're going to become standard for like literally every interaction and job interview and possibly relationship as well? Or do you think they're just finally going to die or become outlawed? Like, where do we go from here?
You know, it was corporations first, then it was celebrities, then it was just rich people who aren't famous, but they also want to protect their privacy. The next frontier is people like you and me. And are we going to start giving them to their partners? You know, I think some people are going to start experimenting with it. It doesn't take much to go online, download a free NDA and without even consulting a lawyer and hand it over to someone. I did, as a joke, send one to my girlfriend. She hasn't signed it yet, but I at least sent it. So
that's Reeves Wideman, who may or may not be single soon. You can read his work on NDAs in our beautiful print magazine in your own home or on nymag.com/lineup.